MySQL has had a long and sometimes strange journey, from an independent database project to being commercialized, then brought to Sun, and now possibly moving to a new home again. Briar Aker is the Director of Technology for MySQL at Sun Microsystems, and probably as familiar as anyone with the life history and current status of the popular open source database. He'll be speaking at the MySQL conference in late April on a number of topics, and he's joined us here today. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
So, why don't you start, for those who aren't familiar, what has been the life history of MySQL at this point?
Well, MySQL began, about a little over a decade ago, when Monty Vadinis had decided to take the database he had at the time, which was called Unireg, and decided to add a client-server protocol to it and bring SQL to it. Before that, it was probably resembled something more closely to Berkeley's DB than anything else. And since that, it's, you know, grown historically for about 10 years, you know, adding more and more advanced features along, going from initially a database which had a somewhat open license to eventually being fully GPL.
So it's now under the wing of Sun when they acquired MySQL. Obviously, you've heard the rumors, I'm sure, as everyone else has, and probably can't comment too much. But if we assume that a certain large New York-based company were to acquire Sun, do you think MySQL would fit well into that world?
Well, you know, IBM actually has a project to run their storage engine that they use for DB2 directly under MySQL. At the same time, MySQL a couple of years ago gained a bit of popularity on their, I think it's, what is it, the iSeries? I always forget the name. Basically, their mainframes. MySQL picked up a bit of popularity in that area. So I would actually think it would fit pretty well. I mean, MySQL has been, you know, traditionally above just the point of just being, say, a Unix-based database or a Windows-based database. I mean, it's pretty much fit on just about anything you can imagine.
Now, IBM already owns, I think it's Ingress that they purchased a few years ago. It's either Ingress or Informix.
It's Informix.
Okay. It was one of those iDatabases. So would you see any synergy there?
I really wouldn't know. I haven't seen Informix for, been a very long time since I've actually taken a look at it. There's obviously, with the work IBM did with DB2 and MySQL, obviously there's some synergy there. But really, I think I last used Informix somewhere back around 1997, so I haven't really had any experience with it for a long time.
I get a feeling it's almost like all your databases are belong to us at this point. It's going to acquire them all. So another thing that happened this year since we talked to you at OSCON is that Monty has left at this point, as I understand
it.
Yep. Can you talk a little bit about what's been going on in the community and where what schisms there may or be exist at this point?
Well, at this point, the most interesting thing that's been going on in the community has been a kind of a reawakening around the issue around user contributions. Namely, we've seen much more of a push towards, you know, taking user contributions. There's been, you know, there's some attempts on the MySQL side to, you know, find a way to bring in contributions. You know, when we created the Drizzle microkernel, which is a fork of the main kernel, one of the first things we decided to do was try to find a way to really bring in more community involvement. I think last month we had something like 67, outside contributors to the project. Even in December, I think we had something like 48 or so contributors. My numbers are probably off by one or two, but, we've seen a lot more interest in companies providing developers and just a stronger interest in kind of helping shape the future of the database.
Do you think that in most open source projects, you're going to get this eventual, almost like sheep farmers and cattle farmers things between the people who want higher performance and the people who want more features?
You know, there's always an inevitable, you know, no open source project is complete until it's, you know, has a mail reader built in, I think was the old joke. So there is always an issue of pushing in more features and so forth. You know, I think that inevitably leads to, to trees that can, you know, some trees to solve this problem, some trees to solve that problem. You know, in my own world, that was one of the reasons why when we started refactoring MySQL, we decided to go with a microkernel architecture so that we could actually take, you know, any form or any piece of, you know, you don't want any kind of authentication, fine. We won't load an authentication module. You need PAM authentication, fine. We'll load a PAM authentication module. So, you know, to me, that's kind of the natural evolution is open source is actually towards, you know, more microkernel type architectures. I think if you look around, you know, certain things I've seen about, like recently about refactoring around OpenOffice and other projects, I think kind of shows that long-term, you know, open source projects that tend to pick or tend to evolve eventually towards, you know, being a much more modular design tend to actually last longer.
Right. Well, that's certainly the direction the Linux kernel took. I assume that means that we're not going to get select star from Gmail where sender equals anytime soon.
You know, it wouldn't be surprised me at all if somebody hadn't at least put something together that like that as an example.
Right, because I know there have been extensions that allow you to do like pseudo tables out of operating system stuff.
Oh, yeah, we've had pseudo tables out of operating system stuff. We've had tables that have come out of, say, Amazon's S3 service. There was an example a couple of years ago where I saw somebody selecting data out of a Google spreadsheet. You know, inevitably, people do all kinds of little kind of niche projects, either just for, you know, saying, hey, look, you know, look, Ma, what I can do, or just for, you know, they have a specific need or a specific want, and, you know, they go off and decide to do that.
Since you mentioned Amazon and it's a kind of a hot topic, if you look at both Google's App Engine and not so much with Amazon because you could drop a VM there with a DB if you want, but what they offer for native storage, both of them seem to be taking very much the attitude that hashing is a better solution for most people than a full relational database. And there seems to be a lot of push toward having the idea that you should use relational databases only where it really makes sense. Is this a natural just pendulum swing, or is there more to it than that?
Oh, I think this is actually a very natural swing, and I generally agree with it. If we look at what's been done in recent time, you know, we've seen models go much more closer towards, you know, object relational models. And in object relational models, for the most part, all you really need is, you know, some kind of a hash index. I think it's inevitable that we'll see things, you know, other types of databases show up. I mean, there's HBase, there's Hypertable, you know, we've seen MemcacheDB created, all these different projects, which in many, you know, what they're looking towards is, hey, I've got some data, I have a key, I have some way of looking it up, let me just insert that data and let me get the data back. To me, you know, the relational databases really, you know, have always been really pretty awesome for, you know, basically metadata, series data, and so forth. But I think it's kind of inevitable that we see other types of storage means come about. And, you know, key lookup is, you know, pretty much a bread and butter type thing for many types of web applications.
And also, if you look at things like Force.com, the model they've been pushing is a RESTful interface or a SOAP-based interface into their what is under the tables relational database. Can you do relational DBs in the cloud easily?
I think you can do relational databases in the cloud, but, you know, like anything, you pay for it by, you know, based on performance. Either you pay for it by the cloud database will, you know, be able to store smaller sets of data, or you pay for it in the fact that, you know, naturally doing joins across multiple nodes is fairly expensive. And that's, you know, that's just kind of what you want to do. I mean, we talk about, you know, we relax relational, integrity, we relax, you know, ACID in order to get higher performance out. And that's just been kind of a natural piece. You know, as bandwidth increases, as a number of pieces of technology increase, we can do more and more of that. But in the end, you know, the closer you get down to, you know, the faster you want the vehicle to run, or the faster you want your database to run, I should say, and your data lookups to run, you know, you start throwing out things because it turns out sometimes you don't need them. And, you know, if you look at really like RESTful-based databases right now, you know, the most interesting one I find out there usually is CouchDB, just because, you know, there's a natural need for that ability to do RESTful lookups on data sets. So, I mean, we see all of this, you know, we see all of these extensions occurring to databases right now and all these new forms of databases out there. It's kind of nice to see that people are, you know, opening their minds up a little bit as to what, you know, that there's more than just one way to store data.
You obviously have a lot of stake in the MySQL conference. What are the big things that people should look forward to there this year?
The big things I would look forward to is, I think many people right now have been shown interest in our main project, which is Drizzle, which is a reworking of MySQL towards both microkernel design and also towards going for, you know, much faster performance under, you know, multi-core architecture. That's something I see that you know, there's been some significant interest in. I'm kind of really interested to see what's occurring in the world of NODB. You know, Oracle just released a new plugin which fixed a number of the performance issues that have been related to having NODB support multi-core architectures. At the same time, we have Percona with ExtraDB, which, you know, is focused a little more on providing more, a gearhead level, like tuning parameters. We see PBXT. There's still a lot of interest out there, you know, in kind of that next generation or just how are we evolving the basic storage engine. So that's some of the highlights, I think, of what we'll see at the conference.
How is the relationship between MySQL and the folks over at Oracle doing these days? I mean, that kind of was an awkward moment when kind of a core piece of technology moved off into what could be seen as a competitor.
Yeah, I actually think it's turned out just fine. Oracle has continued to release NODB. We continue to see performance enhancements of it. They continue to fix bugs, support things. If there was any, you know, fear of, you know, Oracle, you know, just buying it and killing the technology, I think, you know, we're so many years past that now that I think that should, you know, that kind of fear should have already been shed by this point. As I mentioned earlier, you know, other folks have now been extending NODB. Google has been, like I said, Percona. The NODB market is, the NODB code base seems to be pretty alive and pretty healthy. So I wouldn't really be all that concerned about it.
One of the concerns that a lot of people have about the new internet is that a lot of the rich information in it, be it in flash applications or in the case of databases, locked up in databases, is both hard to search and very transient in some ways, so that it's hard to archive. How do you see the relationship between databases and both search and kind of long-term internet memory?
So when we talk about databases, well, let's extend this. Relational databases, as far as supporting what we call full text or inverted indexes, you know, that type of thing. I think we've kind of moved past trying to shove that into a relational database at this point. We see open source projects like Sphinx. We've had Lucene for a very long time. I think there's been new types of storage means, which we traditionally wouldn't have called databases. But those storage means have been, you know, we see them getting better and better and better. So as far as search goes, I think we'll see, you know, far more interest there. What there is, by the way, which I find interesting, is that the amount of hardware required to actually, you know, find data on the internet, or I should say to harvest data off the internet, has come down in price. If you look at, you know, commodity hardware with commodity storage nowadays, you know, there's a lot of room to being able to crawl the internet nowadays. And while the total amount of data actually has expanded, that core set of data that's still, you know, the very valuable stuff to actually want to search on, you know, we see a world where I could easily see somebody popping in with a new search engine at some point instead of trying to, you know, go after the 80 part of the 80-20 rule. you know, they could actually go after, you know, little 20% fee, 20% of the data, and actually find and build really incredible searches. So I don't know, I think we're probably still on the verge of someone actually being able to create another search engine soon.
Right. One example I was thinking about in specific, because I've been talking to some of the folks doing in the Science Commons, for example, is the problem when you've got these vast databases of, for instance, genomes, and most of those are stored in data, in traditional databases, and trying to make sure that there is some preservation and easy access to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of data that's, I mean, we still haven't really done a, there's not, well, for one thing, we don't expose databases to the internet. That's just not been the common case so far to say, here, you know, here's the database and expose it. Instead, you know, what we've been doing is taking APIs to systems. So you see like Facebook or Yahoo or, you know, I did this even early on with Slashdot with the search system there of, you know, finding ways to try to throw data out there and throw it, you know, through APIs. You know, the most common piece of that has been REST so far. But getting down to like the nitty gritties of detailed data, you know, we really just don't have a good means of doing that yet, of actually sharing data. You know, many people thought that XML was going to save the day, but it's, I think it's now obvious to everyone that XML didn't save the day. It's a great data exchange format, but it didn't save the day for, you know, solving these kinds of problems.
I guess that's what the whole thrust of the semantic web is about, is trying to get some organization of meaning to this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, semantic web continues to be something that gets thrown out a lot. So far, it's never come out, you know, so far it's never become anything concrete that anybody can really use or will shape our lives. Really, you know, RESTful type APIs have been the closest thing so far. So I haven't seen anything so far emerge that actually makes me think that we're have any kind of convergence on any sort of final solution there.
Brian Aker has been with us today. He is the director of technology for MySQL at Sun Microsystems, and he will be on numerous panels at the MySQL conference coming up, April 20th?
I believe so.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you there.
Okay.